Almost every August 6th, Andy Warhol's birthday, at a little restaurant and ice cream parlor on New York's Upper East Side called Serendipity 3, there's a séance. Around 20 fans and former friends of Warhol's sit around a table, the same table at which Andy sat sometimes, beginning in the 50s, and held court, and yes, even worked, especially in the early days.
He would be coming in practically three or four times a day.
Stephen Bruce is one of the original owners of Serendipity.
And then he would say, please save a big table for me because I'm coming with 10 people. And then he would serve espresso and desserts to everyone, and then he would bring out all of his drawings in black and white and supply everyone with India ink pens, and he would have them color all of the drawings. So you might say that Serendipity was Andy Warhol's first factory.
A small wood sculpture of Andy hangs over the table, and at the August event, the group of ex-cohorts tries to conjure him up. Not that you need a séance or a sculpture to see Warhol's image. That's everywhere, and he created it, inspired by the stars before him.
On the good ship, lollipop, it's a sweet trip to a candy shop.
I think Shirley Temple was Andy's first star.
Victor Bokros knew and worked for Warhol for about a decade, starting in the early 70s. His book, Warhol, the Biography, was published in 1988.
He dreamt himself out of his extremely poverty-struck existence in Pittsburgh as a child via the movies. Shirley Temple was the same age as he was, the same size as he was, and had a similar enough build that he actually then started copying some of her gestures, which turn up later in famous photographs of him taken in the 60s. So it was a very deep fixation.
Warhol had been ill as a child, with a rare form of rheumatism which kept him out of school for long stretches of time. He was at home, making movie star photo collages in his bedroom.
Gene Harlow, Carol Lombard. You know, this is during the Depression, you have to remember, or just after the Depression also. And, of course, this is a sort of sumptuous and rich world which didn't really exist anywhere. This kind of living that you saw on the silver screen, the Fred Astaire hotel life. So Andy really did dream himself into those movies and into those sets.
Later, just like in the movies, Andy came to New York and found success as a commercial artist, ever the fan.
He's stalked Truman Capote, who was at the height of his youthful celebrity.
Tony Sherman, co-author of Pop, The Genius of Andy Warhol.
A friend of mine told me that he once came across Andy standing outside of 21 in the middle of the afternoon, and Andy started beckoning to his friend frantically, saying, "It's Truman Capote, he's in there." And then Capote, all 5'2" of him, came out of the restaurant and cast a sidelong glance at this flea and hurried on his way. I wanna be
loved by you. Once Andy Warhol became a pop artist, there was no stopping him. He was incredibly productive, turning out thousands of paintings, using the images of the stars he admired. Elizabeth Taylor, James Dean, Marlon Brando, Warren Beatty, Marilyn Monroe, Elvis, Jackie. And he went everywhere, to every art show, nightclub, happening, opening. One friend famously joked that Andy would have attended the opening of a bureau drawer.
Andy loved being famous, and his view of life was that when he got up in the morning, he put on a costume and put on makeup as if he was going to play a role in a film or something, or in a play. And then he stepped out of his house and he was on stage.
Andy, do you think that pop art has sort of reached the point where it's becoming repetitious now?
Yes.
Do you think it should break away from being pop art?
No.
Are you just going to carry on?
Yes.
So that he loved that, and he certainly needed it and thrived on it.
Andy's fan's-eye view of the world, through which he cultivated his own fans, pre-Entertainment Tonight, pre-E-Channel, was quite new. Bob Colicello was editor of Warhol's Interview magazine in the 1970s.
One of the reasons he loved having the magazine is he could go up to stars and say, "Oh, I'd love you to be on the cover of my magazine." And he could meet anybody by offering them an interview.
And what is true of many celebrities was true of Warhol. The bigger he got, the more starstruck he became.
You know, you'd go out with Andy and he'd be, "Oh my God, there's Lorna Luft. Oh, there's Lorna Luft. She's such a big star." You know, "Or there's Jan Michael Vincent. Oh, we got to meet him."
In about 1985, Andy was on The Love Boat.
And I just want to say how honored I am that you chose my wife, Mary, to be the subject of your portrait.
Maybe you two would like to get together with us here in L.A.
Oh, Andy, we can't. We're not getting off the ship.
He appeared on stage for something called the 100 Greatest Stars or something that was being photographed for People magazine in L.A., and they got together sort of the 100 most famous people, and he was one of them, and he was really sort of surprised by that and very turned on by it. On the other hand, he had been shot and almost killed in 1968 by a fan, one of those vague people who he'd met and he'd given a little bit of work to, and you know. And he knew that he was playing a somewhat dangerous game. You know, he knew that he was surrounded by violence, and he just believed that he had a knack to pass through these very violent situations.
Warhol survived the shooting and lived nearly 20 more years, and his success and his celebrity worship never waned. Warhol died in 1987 after surgery to remove his gallbladder. Reportedly, he'd gone into New York Hospital, asking an upper-level employee there if there were any big stars in the hospital at the time. She replied, "You're the biggest."
When he died, he was more successful than he'd ever been. He was so famous that when he walked into openings in Europe, people used to just burst into tears because they couldn't believe that this man, who seemed so fragile, survived all this, you know, stuff.
But he was still fragile, and he always held on to his childhood self, the one that adored Shirley Temple.
And so he did live the eternal fan's life.
This is an off year for the Serendipity Seance. Stephen Bruce is hoping that next August 6th, the spiritual summoning of Andy will proceed as usual.
Of course, we always put a few pieces of lemon icebox pie out on the table during the seance because that was Andy's favorite dessert.
He was a man who had so many favorite things. For WNYC, I'm Sarah Fishko.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.